Good to see a good number out this evening. Certainly a time of the year where we certainly have had our emotions stirred if we pull for football teams, and I think probably most of us have. I hope that, these are small things as far as life is considered, but certainly it's enjoyable to be able to experience some of the pleasant things of clean entertainment and seeing those achieve goals. I've always likened sports with my children to let that be sort of a life's lessons, both in victory and in defeat, and learning how some of the qualities that are necessary in competing in athletics certainly have an application in the Christian life, and we can go to 1 Corinthians 9 to prove that. But we also are at a time for many of you students, and I don't need to tell you this, we're probably stress levels are somewhat high as you're dealing with the finals and the struggles, and it's just so encouraging to me to see your presence here, you putting God first. And I hope tonight that we'll be encouraged and just looking at our hearts as some of the wonderful things that Brother Roberts has already led us in prayer about just being the kind of people we need to be. We need to think of others. Tonight I want to talk to you about a people of compassion. It's interesting as we live in a time where true concern for others is becoming rarer. And I mean, really, they've done surveys that this generation has less friends, less involvement with others than any generation that has ever lived in this country, at least where they've done surveys. And there's a lot of reasons for that. I won't get into all of those things except to tell you that everyone wants to be cared for. It's not a good situation to be in life where you are isolated and you're asking this question, who will care? And folks, there's a lot of folks asking those questions. You know, when I was in Lincoln, Nebraska, I had an opportunity to help people come out of a group that I truly believe was a religious cult. And I worked with a lot of parents and a lot of children, and it was fascinating as you learn about movements. There are movements that are out there that will prey on people's need of others. It's not just religious groups, but political groups do that as well. And sometimes people are given concern. It's not true concern, and people are pulled into things. It is very, very easy, and I'm as guilty as anyone, to turn a blind eye to the need of another. A couple of decades ago, I remember hearing a story where there were 65 doctors on a plane and somebody had a health issue and maybe even died on the plane as this plane was flying and nobody noticed the person. Here's everybody able to help. You're on a plane full of doctors and somebody dies. What we need to be is we need to be like Jesus. And brethren, getting out of ourselves, getting involved with others is frightening. Sometimes it's overwhelming. Sometimes we find this a huge challenge. Jesus said in John 13:34, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this all will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. It has always been, in my opinion, as we study the Scriptures, the passages that cause me to have a relationship with you and you to have a relationship with me to be the more challenging one. Whether it be dealing with brethren, whether it be dealing with the world, remember the two greatest commandments of loving God and loving your neighbor. And there's one Pharisee who's my neighbor? You know, they didn't want to know. And these are challenges. People are challenged. As we look at Matthew 25, you're familiar with the passage where Judgment Day is pictured. And there were those that dealt with those brothers and sisters that were in Christ, I believe the context, but still the context here, when people are saying, well, when did I help you, Jesus? And he says, for I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you took me in. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. Notice all of these things. It involves time. It involves effort. It involves us. You know, we'd love to make a quick contribution and move our way. But dealing with others is what Jesus did, what he wants us to do. He's outlining Judgment Day in this context. In verse 37, then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink?
When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? In other words, how did we do this? And the king will answer and say to them, assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to this one of these least of these my brethren, you did it to me. Compassion. Getting outside of our immediate needs. And now, folks, I know, particularly, I know you students right now, you're laser focused, and rightly so, on how am I going to study? How do I know what's going to be on the final? You know, do I know everything I need to know? I need to go out here and find some more information. It's fascinating to remember school and watching my own son going through those efforts. You don't ever think you know enough, and you're just going to be burning the candle at both ends. I understand how life, where there are things you have to do, and for a while, everything's blocked out. But there is a place, and there is a time, and there will be opportunities for us to help others. You know, one of the things when it comes to compassion, really caring for others, it is so easy to be like those that we kind of look down on in Luke 10 on the parable of the Good Samaritan. It says, and Jesus answered and said, a certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves who stripped him of his clothing, wounded him, and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance a certain priest came down the road, and when he saw him, he passed on the other side. Likewise a Levite, when he arrived at the place, came and looked and passed by on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion. So he went to him, bandaged his wound, pouring on oil and wine, and he set him on his own animal and brought him to an inn and took care of him. I think some other translations talk about it was a lawyer that passed on the other side. And I think years ago I heard the lawyer joke. Well, why did the lawyer pass on the other side? Well, the guy was already robbed. Okay, that's the lawyer joke for the sermon. Okay, we'll let that go. But there were, you know, here were people that truly should have been involved in the religion of the Lord. And the Old Testament system, these were people who knew God's word. They saw the need. And I don't know what was going on in their lives, but here was somebody dying, and they didn't have much time to live. On the next day when he departed, he took out 2 denarii, gave them to the innkeeper, and said to him, take care of him, and whatever more you spend when I come again, I will repay you. So which of these three do you think was neighbor to him who fell among the thieves? By the way, there was a lawyer who'd early asked, who's my neighbor? He did not want to have the Gentiles to be his neighbor. And Jesus gives this parable, and he finally had to reluctantly said, who is neighbor? Well, he showed mercy. He didn't even want to say the name Samaritan or Gentile. We can be very stubborn. We can be very hard-hearted. We can be busy with many, many, many things. And we can lose some opportunities that the Lord puts before us to show that we really believe in him. You see, these people, whatever it was they were thinking, they didn't see this man with compassion. And brethren, I'll tell you, the more we will with people, sometimes it's so easy just to look at people as things. We can be overwhelmed with this need and that need and this person, another person. It's very easy to become hard-hearted and ignore the needs of others. And so rationalization oftentimes is something that people do. They'll rationally accept the substitute that's not really a substitute. Let me give you a few substitutes very quickly. Things that really didn't show compassion, and that is to acknowledge the need. James 2, 15 and 16, we read about somebody seeing a person who is in need. We're talking about true need. We're not talking about needing a cell phone. We're not talking about needing a new car. We're not talking about somebody needing, you know, the latest fashion of clothes. We're talking about real need here. And he says, if a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to them, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, but you do not give them the things which are needed for the body, what does it profit? Recognizing a need is good, and saying, you know, I want your need to be met. That's valuable. That is better than ignoring it. But it doesn't do anything. It's only a step that should lead to others. Another thing that people sometimes do is assess the blame. In John 9, there was a man who had been born blind from birth. And the first question that the disciples asked Jesus in John 9 and verse 2 is the disciples ask him, saying, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" And Jesus points out, no, that's the wrong question here. Now, there's always a value in understanding situation. Now, sometimes people are in need because they've made very foolish choices. They've made foolish choices in relationships. Maybe times they don't know better. And so understanding why something happens, I'm not poo-pooing that. I'm not saying that's wrong. But I'm saying that what's happening here is that it's kind of intellectual exercise, and here's why they're here. And then we don't do anything. Jesus said in verse 3, Jesus answered, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but that the works of God should be revealed in him." You know, another thing that doesn't help, I mean, it's not without value, and that's to talk to somebody else about the situation. Now, if you're talking to somebody else to do something, that's okay, but sometimes we just talk about it. Of course, we've already talked about ignoring the situation. Sometimes people change the subject. Sometimes people say there's no problem whatsoever. And sometimes people will say there's nothing I can do. Now, by the way, I'm going to talk in the course of this evening about your limitations. There are some needs out there that there's very little you can do about. We're going to talk about that too. There are some things that are wisdom, but sometimes when we can do something, we say we can do nothing. Now, that's what I'm talking about here. A funny illustration. I printed it all out in the outline. About a man who fell into a pit and couldn't get himself out. A subjective person came along and said, "I feel for you down there." A Pharisee said, "Only bad people fall into a pit." A mathematician calculated how he fell into the pit. A news reporter wanted the exclusive story on the pit. A Confucius says, "If you had listened to me, you would not be in that pit." Buddha said, "Your pit is only a state of mind." A realist says, "That's a pit." The county inspector asked if he had a permit to dig a pit. The professor gave him a lecture on the elementary principles of the pit. An evasive person came along and avoided the subject of his pit altogether. And a self-pitying person said, "You haven't seen anything till you see my pit." And then a charismatic said, "Just confess that you're not in a pit." And then finally, the optimist said, "Things could be worse." And the pessimist says, "Things will get worse." Jesus, seeing the man, took him by the hand and lifted him out of the pit. So that's the point I'm talking about here. You know, there comes a time for action. There comes a time where we can do something. Let's do something. Let's be sure we do something. And we're going to talk more about wisdom. We'll talk more about how the process of why you should do something and when you should do something, what the something is that you do. But let's do more than just think about it. Another illustration, modern version of Matthew 25. "I was hungry and you formed the Humanities Club and discussed my hunger. I was in prison and you crept off quietly to your chapel and prayed for my release. I was naked and in your mind you debated the morality of my appearance. I was sick and you knelt and thanked God for your help. And I was homeless and you preached to me on the spiritual shelter of the love of God. I was lonely and you left me alone to pray for me. You seem very close to God, but I'm still very hungry and lonely and cold." Again, the same point being made. Not that we shouldn't pray, not that we shouldn't talk with others, not that we shouldn't recognize a problem and talk to somebody about the love of God, but what I'm saying is that when there's a need that God places before us that is a legitimate need and we can help, let's try to make sure we do. Point one this evening. That's what we want to do. Now, let me tell you why a lot of people aren't very compassionate. As you're young, I know your heart. I know you're ready to go with this. Young people are just ready to jump in, man. You just show somebody a need, and you show the concern, and they want to jump in. I can remember in my youth wanting to jump into everything that came along. Don't regret that. I did have the wisdom that I wished I'd had then, and I still need wisdom today. Not that I've got the corner of the market of wisdom, but there's wisdom that you learn as you work with things. But, you know, when you care about other people, it's going to hurt. I'm telling you, you get involved in evangelism, you get involved with situations, and you, with the purest of motives, try to help. Buddy, you're going to be open for some people doing some cruel things towards you. Bible talked about Jesus coming to the world. It says he came to his own, and his own did not receive him. No one understands better than coming to the people that you want to save, and you're going to give your life for them, and they will turn around and spit on you, curse you, make life difficult for your relatives, that they will do various things, and all you've done is love. So get ready. Now, why a lot of people become hard-hearted is they go out and help others, and they just get bit. Man, oh, man. I got a lot of stories I can share, and I'm sure you've got stories you can share where you put time and you put effort and you did all kinds of things in working with people, and then the time came and they turned on you like a mad dog. I'm telling you up front, get ready for that. Now, there are going to be some great things that you'll help people and solidly help them, but understand what comes with this territory. Understand that. It's important here, and this is where some people kind of may get mad at me when I talk about this subject. You got to have wisdom. When I mean wisdom, I'm talking about that which is thoughtful, that which is insightful, that which is filled with messages from God's Word on what to do and what not to do in situations. I'm talking about love. Let me read this and let me give you some practical things that in times past I've had people upset when I talk about some of these things. But let's first look at biblical principle here. Verse 3, "And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, but have not love, it profits me nothing." Now, could I tell you, when you help people, it needs to be out of the love of God. Not out of some selfish, self-centered love to see yourself for others. Not have some sort of emotional reaction that is not thoughtful. Verse 4, love is thoughtful. Love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself, is not puffed up, does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil, does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. Now, let's talk about this a little. Over the years, I'm pretty well convinced that probably 95, if not 99% of the effort and money that I put into helping people in my younger years with sacrifice, and I'm not trying to blow my horn before you, I'm not trying to somehow tell you what a great person I was, but I can remember so many times where I sacrificed, I took money I didn't have, I did things and ran after people and did things, and I feel like 95 to 99% of what I did when I was young, the only value that what I did was to at least show before the Lord I was sincere and I wanted to help others. You may say, Larry, what do you mean? Well, here's what I mean. Let's cover a few verses, and then I can give you way too many illustrations. I'm only going to give a few tonight. But if you notice that in Scripture, you don't just go out and give anyone a handout, whether it be in the church or whether it be in the world. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 10, it says, "For even when we were with you, we commanded you, if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat." Now, I don't have time tonight to go through all the wisdom and discernment that is necessary, but I'll give you an illustration, one of many. I'll never forget when I was at Flint Hill preaching there years ago in the 80s. A lady came in with a baby. And they came in services, and toward the end of services they wanted some money. And she said, "Well, you know, we need money for gas, and we've got this baby." And I remember the men got together and they got some money, and we gave that person some money and really wanted to help them. And we were sincere as could be. We were sincere. We had a business meeting that night, and as men's business meetings go, it went a while. Somebody came in about after the business meeting. Remember that lady that you helped? That all they needed was gas, and you gave them a little more? Well, about 10 minutes after they left your congregation, we saw them going in another congregation with the baby to go in. And what they were doing, they were asking for something else there. Now, what was happening here? We were helping somebody that, in all likelihood, wanted it for drugs and alcohol. As a matter of fact, there was indications of that. We didn't see at the time that there. And so what do you do if somebody's a drug addict? What if you do somebody's an alcoholic? What if you do if somebody is a professional beggar? What if you do if somebody's dealing with mental illness and they're on the street? There's so many what ifs. Let me give you another illustration. There was a fellow once, I remember I helped, he needed serious car repairs. And he came to me, I found out about him, and I put in serious money to help him get his car repaired because he gave me this emergency situation, how this was happening and this was happening, and so I wanted to help him, glad to help him. And then Lloyd Barker had talked to me. He said, you know, I've helped so many people over the years and giving them gas and giving them repairs, and I started giving them postcards. They told me this story. And I would give this postcard with a self-addressed stamped envelope. This, all they had to do is just send this back to me when they got back to where they were going. Lloyd said he did that for years, and you know how many he got back? Zero. I started doing that. And guess how many I got back? Zero. You may say, well, Larry, what's your options? Here's what I finally started doing. Again, people think I'm mean. I'm not trying to be mean. What I started doing is that when somebody came to me not knowing them from Adam, and they asked for help, I first wanted to give them time. I really think giving somebody a quick handout can be a cop-out. I'm willing to give somebody time and lots of time and help if I have a true understanding of where they're at. And so what I started doing is I would listen to a person, and they'd tell me these stories about what happened, about this relative, that relative, and this thing. And I'd listen for a while. I would take notes. And then I would ask this. Could you give me a telephone number of any of these people that you have just described to me? I will tell you again, I'm giving you my experience. I'm giving you my experience of people who walked in off the street wanting to talk to me that I never knew from Adam. There's been only two occasions in the last 15 years where somebody was willing to actually give me a number. I confirmed it, and I helped them. And you know what's happening? When I remember Lloyd telling me, he says, this person could be into drugs. And here you are, they're giving you the story, they're not giving you the truth, and you don't confirm it. Guess what happens if somebody's into drugs and you just give them a handout? Have you helped them? You see, that's my approach. You may have a wiser one. I don't have a corner on the market on the best how to deal with this. And I've helped people over the years, glad to help them, but I have found generally that when somebody comes to you out of the blue, you really need to spend more time and learn. That's all I'm asking. And there'd be people in this audience could give you a little more information about some of those things too. We won't go into that anymore, except that's what I'm saying. Use wisdom as you try to show compassion. Ephesians 4:28, let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands what is good, that he may have something to give to him who has need. Let me tell you some people I'm really willing to help. Somebody working jobs, working hard, things happen to them. Sometimes somebody looking for a job. You know, I remember back when my dad was in Birmingham and he had contacts. He was actually in management, and we used to get people jobs. They were struggling. We'd go find it and give them a chance. You know, again, not everybody can work. I'm not telling you, well, if you don't work, you can't eat. And that some people can't work. I'm telling you, be wise. That's all I'm going to say. I can't go any further tonight than this, except I hope I've made the point. And now, be careful as you talk about the needy. I think one of the reasons why I probably emotionally reacted and put thousands of dollars in the situations in times past is because members of the church used to be attacked because we don't care for the needy. That weapon was used in the institutional controversy. I remember people attacking me and attacking others. And there was a time I was afraid that, oh, I don't want somebody to attack me. I don't know if that's what my thinking was, but I was so quick to rush to something. Well, don't let people intimidate you. Don't let people use the care for the needy as a carnal weapon. There are people today that will say about this church, this church doesn't care for the needy. Its members don't care for the needy. You don't know what these members are doing. Make that point last week. Won't go back and say that. But there are legitimate needs. Here's the point I want to make. You find a legitimate need, you give it your help. You give it your time. Let me go back, though, to helping others. It's people, and it's struggle. It sometimes can be frustrating. Some people will disappoint us. I like how Galatians 6:9 says, "And let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good, especially to those who are the household of faith." Compassion will cost you time, money, and effort. And again, I'd rather not be the one giving a handout and moving on. Now, there's a place for a handout. I'm not saying you can't give a handout. But I am saying let's make sure we do it with the right motives. Let's not be like the Pharisees. There are people who say, "Yes, I'm compassionate. I want to show you." Let's not be like the hypocrites and sound the trumpet before we give. And again, I think I've already given you the advice from the older preacher. Let me tell you one other thing. Again, statistically, let's say we deal with the homeless. I remember politically back in the 80s when Ronald Reagan was president, you hardly ever heard about the homeless till he became president, and it became a political weapon to smear Republicans and to smear Ronald Reagan. I mean, it was huge. Ronald Reagan's in office, and now we've got all these homeless, and people report on the homeless, and colleges will do these homeless seminars. And I want to tell you something, there are homeless people. There are homeless people living out in the street. But again, did you know statistically, if you look at the percentages of why that is happening, a high percentage of those who are homeless have mental illnesses or they're drug addicts. And I'm not saying they don't have needs, and I'm not saying that even a handout in those situations may not be legitimate, but one of the things that you look at once the mental health laws change in this country where they used to force people into help, you now have people in situations that, frankly, brethren, there's maybe some cases there's little we can do. And again, I'm talking about wisdom. I'm not making a blank statement. I know there's some that are homeless that can be helped, but there's wisdom here. And I would tell you, let's begin before we just rush out in situations to try to understand it and even try to have help from people who really maybe specialize in some of these areas. Again, some things to think about. Okay, how to show compassion. Let's finish the lesson. This has gone much longer than I realized it would have that section there. Let's talk about just a few principles about how we can help others. First off, it really goes back to being like Jesus. It goes back to seeing what Christ has done for you. I like verse 1. Is there any consolation in Christ, any comfort of love, any fellowship of the Spirit, any affection and mercy? If you have experienced the mercy of God, it ought to make you want to help others. I want to help. I want to be involved. And I want to tell you something about this congregation. I know you're that way. I know every one of you are the kind of people that if there's something I can help with and be a part of, you want to do that. The Bible talks about in verse 3, the mind of Christ, let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but the interest of others. But let me say something else, what I wanted in trying to finish the lesson tonight. Let's go beyond just helping the needy. Let's talk about helping others in other needs. You know, it's interesting, as we've got a congregation here tonight, there are those that may have various needs. Jesus, when he looked at situations, he saw needs of hunger, needs of health, needs of spiritual needs. Look at the times when Jesus showed compassion. And when Jesus went out, he saw a great multitude. And he was moved with compassion for them and healed their sick. In Matthew 15:32, now Jesus called his disciples to himself and said, "I have compassion on the multitude because they have now contended with me 3 days and have nothing to eat. And I do not want to send them away hungry lest they faint on the way." In Matthew 20:34, Jesus had compassion and touched their eyes, and immediately their eyes received sight and they followed him. What are needs amongst those we are associating with? My brethren, we are in Auburn, Alabama. Many of you are in school. We live in a certain neighborhood. We live within a certain community. We have certain associations. We live here where we're at. Let's look at the opportunities within the realm that we're at. At least start there. You know, we need to be looking and listening. There are times, by the way, you get married. One of the big challenges is listening to your mate and finding out what your mate needs. And it goes back and forth so that your needs change over time. We're talking about maybe emotional needs, spiritual needs, just basic physical needs within the family. You know, sometimes what a person needs, they need another person. You would be surprised, and maybe you wouldn't be surprised, of how many people, even tonight, in an assembly like this, are lonely people. They don't feel like, you know, that many people involved with them. They feel isolated. You know, Paul had to face trials by himself. 2 Timothy 4:9, he's talking to Timothy, "Be diligent to come to me." He says, "For Demas has forsaken me, having loved this present world, has departed for Thessalonica, Crescens for Galatia, Titus for Dalmatia." And later he talks about the trial he faced in verse 17. "But the Lord stood with me and strengthened me so that the message may be preached fully through me, that all the Gentiles might hear. And I was delivered out of the mouth of the lion, and the Lord delivered me from every evil work and preserved me for his heavenly kingdom. To him be glory forever and ever. Amen." Here, there were times Paul had to stand alone, and sometimes Christians, we have to stand alone. And sometimes we may be in a congregation of all kinds of people interested in doing things, and we may have needs and people not see it. But let the Lord help you. But let us be looking out for one another. Who do you want to help? Now, here's a big challenge. You know, sometimes people want to connect benevolence with evangelism. And I always find that interesting. Is that really how you want to learn to do evangelism, by benevolence? Because I'm going to tell you something about benevolence. I should help the needy regardless if I get anything in return. I should help the needy even when they may not be very much of a subject of the gospel. When you talk about helping people, sometimes I'm afraid we want to do it on a certain socioeconomic level, or people that can pay us back, or people that we're friends with. But remember what Jesus said, Matthew 5:46. "For if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet your brethren only, why do you do more than others? Do not even the tax collectors do so? Therefore you shall be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is imperfect." Oftentimes, the people that we need to be reaching out to are people we may not be very comfortable with. Jesus said in Luke 14:12, when he said to them who invited them, "When you give a dinner or a supper, do not ask your friends, your brothers, your relatives, or your rich neighbors, lest they also invite you back and be repaid. But when you give a feast, invite the poor, the maimed, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed, because they cannot repay you. For you shall be repaid at the resurrection of the just." So again, you know, sometimes it may be socially awkward people we're not comfortable with. It may be other circumstances, situations, but let's make sure we're not self-centered. I'll help you because I think you can help me. Again, time has flown. But in a local church, it's so important that we continue to work and work and work and never be satisfied with the status quo. We need to be involved with one another. We need to learn about one another. We need to talk with one another. Now, I'll tell you something. Sometimes people are in need. It takes two people to help in a congregation to meet needs. And sometimes there's a person in need, and they're not going to talk to anybody. They're going to be like the middle linebacker, lowering their head and trying to get out of this building as fast as they can. It's very hard to help those kind of people. But in 1 Corinthians 12:22, it says, "No, much rather, these members of the body which seem to be weaker are necessary. And those members of the body which we think to be less honorable, on these we bestow greater honor. And our unpresentable parts have greater modesty. But our presentable parts have no need. For God composed the body, having given greater honor to the part which lacks it, that there be no schism in the body, but that the members should have the same care for one another." Another critical element of compassion, you're just like with love, rejoices in the truth. And there are times people are in messes. They're in messes. And sin is their number one problem. And there are times, I'll tell you what the Bible talks about, there are situations where brethren, when they sin and are withdrawn from and marked, we're not to eat with them. We're separate from them. There, though, sometimes they're in a mess because they're in sin, and we got to address that issue. Again, I'm talking about wisdom here. I'm talking about true compassion. But in Jesus, when he saw the rich young ruler and his hard-heartedness, his love for riches, he says, "And Jesus, looking at him, loved him and said to him, 'One thing you lack, go your way and sell whatever you have and give to the poor, and you'll have treasure in heaven. And come, take up your cross and follow me.' But he was sad at this word and went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions." Being compassionate is not just giving somebody everything they want. It's not rushing after them. "I need this," and you rush here. "I need this and need that." You want to do it with wisdom. And you want to make sure you give them what they really need. You could actually be actually helping them in their problems. Not get out of their problems, but with their problems. So we do not want to be ashamed of the gospel. And we may just make this our last point tonight. I think I will. You know, as we talk about compassion, brethren, again, please, I hope you don't take me wrong in some of the things we've talked about, because there's much more wisdom in this than I could do in a short lesson. But the point that I want to make and that the Lord wants us to make is that we need to see how God is compassionate to us. And when we see that, we really, really want to help. And we really, really want to give. Jesus talked to this man that had been possessed by demons. And he didn't let him go in the boat with him. He sent him back to his people who thought he was crazy. He says, however, Jesus did not permit him, but said to him, go home to your friends and tell them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he has had compassion on you. We need to be a compassionate people. You know what the greatest thing you can do for somebody? Is to share the gospel with them. And we can look at, you know, how do you look at somebody that's lost? The Pharisees, they saw somebody that's a sinner, they go, ooh, he's a sinner, give up on him. 2 Timothy 2, in the outline, talks about how we should view people that are in sin as having been taken captive by Satan. We should view people in sin as being in a place once where we were at. If you ultimately want to help somebody, get them right with God, and then the Lord will bless them and help them to grow and to profit in the areas that they need. Brethren, let me summarize it again. Let us be helpers. Let us help the needy, even when they're not subjects of the gospel or something that could be responded. We help them because there's a legitimate need in wisdom. Let us help our brethren, whether it be physical needs or emotional needs or time of association or other needs that may be out there. Let's be the kind of people where we're talking to one another. We care about one another. And we're willing to have the help for others. And one more time, you're going to get bit sometime. You're going to do like I did. I bet I made some of the foolish mistakes, and sometimes there were people who just got mad at me, and I tried to help them, and I think there were other issues in their life. And there's a tendency to kind of want to quit. We must never quit. Never quit. Let us be known for our love for one another, our love for the world, and most of all, our love for God. If we can assist you anyway this evening in becoming a Christian, I hope your heart is ready to yield to His call. If we can assist you in any way, would you come as we stand and sing?